Well, we are trying something a little bit different this week in terms of format. Since this is Thanksgiving week, and because many of you will be traveling and spending time away from your usual weekday routines, especially on Thursday and Friday, I thought I would read to you a story that I've written. This is fiction. It comes from my imagination. But I promise you this will reveal some very important realities about life in God. Let me pick up with a little review from yesterday, and then we'll continue. Part two of our story starts now. I open my eyes now, and they slowly adjust to the color of the late autumn sky. I take another look around at this yard and these trees and the leaves discarded all over the place. And this makes me think about God. And that makes me think about people who do not believe in God. And this is something I'm sort of always wondering about. Like, how could you come out into a square piece of land like this? My backyard's not very big. And lie on your back and take a look up at the sky and the trees and the orange, red, yellow and golden leaves and hold an apple in your hand and bite into it and taste its goodness and be living and breathing and be human and not think there is a God. And that God must have made all of this and now we get to sit out here and enjoy it. Just take 10 minutes, 15, or an hour if we have it, and soak in the soil and the land and the plot of property that's ours? Doesn't it have to be gifted to us by some God that is beyond us, yet very attentive to our need for such beauty? Didn't God design, sit down if God needed to, and make a divine blueprint, and then create a world of wonder and beauty such as this? Who or what else could have put all this into place? Should I Google the answer? No, I won't Google that for the same reason I won't use my phone to find out why leaves change color. They just do. Scientific fact robs us of the awe of the tree's secret. Mr. Tree colors his leaves. Mrs. Tree takes her crayon and draws in red. That's the way my daughter used that little brain of hers. Why shouldn't I do the same? Still, who made the tree? I think God did. After all that has happened, I still say he did. My daughter Rebecca and God are now blurring together, front and center in my little brain. I'm still stretched out on my lawn. Very often when I ponder God, Rebecca comes to mind too. It's kind of like they go together. Maybe that is because I see so much of who I suspect God is in our daughter. I mean, who can really know what God is like? Today, I would say God's a creator and quite innovative in his creation. You got the sky, the sun, the cloud over there, the trees again, and grass and leaves. But what really makes his creation concrete is a daughter. Like, who made her? Oh, you think her mother and I did? Yeah, okay, I don't need a refresher course in sex education. I know about birds and bees. I was lying right there at conception, and it was my suffering wife whose hand I held as she let out one excruciating scream on the final push before all her tears turned to absolute joy. And then in an instant, it wasn't her cries I heard, but baby Rebecca's instead. And it's so weird what you remember, but I remember thinking, now I have two screaming women. But to hold that little life, who made her? I've always thought that all of life, whether it be a child or a tree, it needs a source, a mover, and that primary creator is not me. It is you, God. But then, what kind of God? What is your nature? And again, I lean on Becca. There always seemed to be such beauty in the simple way she looked at so many things growing up in this very home. And there still is. Like the day a few weeks ago when I called her to plan for Thanksgiving, I had all sorts of ideas about what to serve, how to serve it, even where to serve it. A turkey, apple pie made by my mom and her grandmom, and my wife's stuffing and gravy, absolutely all essential. But should we also be more creative? This is a once-a-year celebration. We have a big table and so many people coming. And there's that internet again, Pinterest. Recipes galore. I could hear my granddaughter screeching at Rebecca's side as she raised her voice over the phone. Dad, relax. Just have what we always have, and it'll be fine. Do not worry. Keep it simple. Remember the freedom of simplicity? She had to go. But you see, that's what I mean. Beauty in the simple. She keeps it simple. And I think that's why I have a really great daughter. Freedom of Simplicity, a reference to that book we read in our book club at church a few years ago. She must get that memory from her mother. But I think I can take credit for the quick wit. God, He made it all. This afternoon has been such a pleasant reminder. Just this little break, lying here, thinking and dreaming and remembering. But all good things must come to an end, and here comes the darkness of the night. I always know when it is coming, but it never ceases to surprise me when day becomes night. I'm inside now, and almost always at this time of the day, I feel drawn to the den, just as the sun sets in the spring, or after the sun has already set this time of year. In winter, I am here long after the sun goes down, because in New England, it seems like the sun never comes up. When I come in here, I often feel like an experienced knight returning to his manor after a day out doing battle with the enemy. Some days he really gets down to war, sword out, yielding his shield. And other days, valiant competition is quiet, and so he comes inside nearly bored. But it's a retreat, no matter how he returns. The same is true for me. I like living in the real world. Believe me, I am no hermit. As long as I can remember, I have had a zest for life. The world is never boring. It used to be I'd read the newspapers that came to the front door each new day. Sometimes I'd be standing there, hot coffee in hand, waiting at the door for Joey Thompson to throw them up and over his shoulder from his bicycle. He almost never missed. Great aim, that kid. But of course, over time, along came the technology, and now I sip coffee and read my iPad. I swore I would never change, but Rebecca insisted. She bought me one for Christmas, and on the card she scribbled, "A sign of the times." There's double meaning to the word times. It was both a reference to living in the 21st century, but also play on the title of my favorite newspaper, The New York Times. A few years ago, it seemed like it genuinely was all the news that's fit to print. A new day, a world abuzz. What happened in Asia while we were sleeping here? And what breaking news would there be out of Boston or Washington or LA in our country? I became fascinated and obsessed with the news because, to me, the news was a reflection on life and sometimes death somewhere. And I say all this to say that I was never stuck in the den as a way to ignore what was going on around me, or to run away and to hide from it all. That is until recently. And now, when I come in here and close the door, it's my way of saying to myself and to my wife, keep out. I want to be alone. I've spent so much time journaling, just getting my thoughts out on paper. For a couple of weeks now, I've been trying to work through just how can I be so steady and consistent in my belief in God while I simultaneously process all that's happened to us? Or is it all that's happened to me? Many nights I have thought of all those Christians through the years that I've seen on television. You probably know the type. There they were, cruising along in life, faith in God, never missing a Sunday at church, most times some sort of spiritual leader, either in their family or church or Sunday school. Typical Americans, too. Kids in school, family vacations when mom and dad finally got 2 weeks off, a house, a car, a pet. They're Bible readers. They gave their bedtime prayers. They gave their tithing when the offering bags came along. 1 year switching out the family vacation for a mission trip. And then one day, while minding their own business, out of nowhere, tragedy strikes. I remember one such story I watched. The teenage son of this couple was driving home from a high school prom when a drunk driver came careening down the opposite side of the road, crossed the double yellow line, and slammed full speed ahead right into their son. kid died instantly. And yet only like a month later, here was his mom and dad, arm in arm, fighting back tears as they looked into the camera and in a very affirming tone told us, "We have such faith in God, and he gives us peace. We know our son is with him now, and one day we will see him again." And I distinctly remember saying out loud even, "Really? I mean, how could that be? Their son was dead. Dead. And what's worse is that a drunk driver killed him. Of course, the drunk lived." And then I felt ashamed for doubting them, because here I was sitting there sharing the same faith in God that these two parents had. But even though I felt I had no right to question their belief in the middle of such loss, I still went to bed that night wondering how genuine and persevering faith could be when a 17-year-old boy went to the grave instead of to college. And yet, here I am by the light of my desk, writing a prayer to God about how grateful I am to be in his presence, how grateful I am that he loves me, he comforts me, he gives me guidance as I try to make sense of my faith in light of my own tragedy. I really do feel God's presence when I am in here. But I also know that definitely my family doubts it. They think I'm just putting up a good front, denying my hurt and sadness and anger. And so I ask myself a lot, is that what I am doing? End of part two. And this will be continued tomorrow. I've written this story as a way to talk about how to express thanks to God during this very special week of Thanksgiving. So tune in tomorrow for more of our story. If not, download the podcast and listen, and invite a friend to listen along as together we continue to learn how to thank God for who he is.